and welcome to Season 13, Episode 39 of the Ubuntu Podcast. I'm Alan, and with me this week is Martin.
Hello.
Hello. And Bark.
Hello.
How are you chaps doing?
Not too bad. Looking forward to finishing work for the year.
Same. Suckers, I did that last week. And this is our penultimate episode this year, and in fact, my last one ever this year. Sorry. This week, we're going to do community news and events and news headlines, but before we get on to all of that, what have you been up to, Martin?
I have been playing that there Cyberpunk 2077 on Ubuntu.
Ooh. Is it any good?
Yes.
Does it have roguelike elements?
I don't know. I still don't understand what any of that means. But it's briefly billed as a role-playing action-adventure computer game. And there's driving in it, so that keeps me happy.
Is it like Grand Theft Auto?
I've never played any of the Grand Theft Autos, so I wouldn't know.
Is the driving element like Hotshot Racing? And as such, will I be able to completely spank you at it like I did the other day?
No, it's not quite like Hotshot Racing. I think I shouldn't have been drinking the vodka and coke whilst we were playing that game. Next time shall be turning up sober.
Is this like the champion chess player who said that she had never played a man who wasn't ill, because afterwards there was always an excuse? I had a headache. I had a stomach ache.
Very good. Yeah. Now, so Cyberpunk's good. I know that there's been a lot of sort of reports on the internet that it's full of bugs. I haven't actually encountered any of these bugs just yet. The only issue I've encountered playing it under Linux is the performance is a bit lacking. Mm-hmm. I understand there are fixes coming to address that, not just for Linux, just generally. But I haven't seen any of the sort of, you know, floating debris and confused people and, you know, unusual graphical glitches and what have you.
You're not playing hard enough.
Well, what I've done is you can start the game in one of three different sort of origin stories. And I've played the initial bit of each of those starting points up to the point at which I've completed the basic weapons training. So probably, I don't know, about 45 minutes to an hour's worth in each of those. And I've not encountered any significant issues. And I saw XDSL. He's also been playing it on AMD graphics on Arch Linux. And I'm playing it using NVIDIA on Ubuntu 20.04.
Is it using Proton?
It is using Proton, yes.
Proton Experimental.
I'm not using Proton Experimental. I'm using 513-4.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I might have to join you in buying that game. Something to do over Christmas. I seem to be buying every other game that you buy recently.
You're welcome.
What about you, Mark? What have you been up to?
Well, I have caved in to considerable peer pressure, and I've been writing an Ubuntu membership application.
Ah, brilliant. Yes, which involves you editing a wiki page.
Yes, which first involves me getting rights to edit said wiki.
Which means pinging me on Telegram and saying, can you add me to this group?
Yeah. So I managed to get permission to edit the wiki, and then I managed to create the wiki page and write it. And then I had to digitally sign the code of conduct, which meant I had to work out how to upload and verify a PGP key, and then work out how to read encrypted emails in Thunderbird, because no one ever sends encrypted emails. I wasn't set up to do that.
That is a bit of a relic from the past, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So, yeah, actually, that was probably harder than writing the application itself. So now I just need to work out when the next meeting that I can attend is and submit my application.
It's usually like the first Tuesday after full moon when the river is flowing or something, isn't it? It's written on a wiki page somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. There's choices. I just have to actually make my choice.
Put your name down.
Yeah, put my name down.
Sweet. And if any of our listeners have received valuable contributions from Mark over the years, they could edit your wiki page and add testimonials to the bottom, couldn't they?
They could. I'm wiki.ubuntu.com/MarkJohnson, I think.
Ah, super.
If you want to see my application and possibly vandalise it.
Well, maybe we'll put a link. Well, yes. They'll need to get access to the wiki first, and they'll have to come through me.
Oh, dear, I'm screwed.
Yes. Awesome. Well, good luck with that. Maybe next time we speak, you'll be an Ubuntu member. All the time after that, maybe. Or maybe not. Who knows? Anyway, enough of this nonsense. Let's get on with the show. So let's start with the community news. And first up, Martin, you've got an NVIDIA update.
I have. Linux users with NVIDIA GPUs may soon be able to RTX on.
Is that I've seen memes about this, about like poorly pixelated pictures is RTX off, and then some lovely 3D rendered thing is RTX on. Is this the new hotness in NVIDIA land?
Apparently so. This is NVIDIA's ray tracing implementation, which is the shorthand for which is RTX, which is why the recent 20 series and 30 series GPUs from NVIDIA are RTX something or other.
Mm-hmm.
NVIDIA have released a new beta driver for Linux. It's 460.27.04, and this includes the latest version of Vulkan, 1.2.162, just love these version numbers, which was released at the end of November, and that includes the fully ratified Vulkan ray tracing extension. So this beta driver should be able to enable ray tracing in games and applications on Linux.
But only on cards that are in this 20 and 30 series that have RTX in front of them.
Yeah, so it is the RTX 20 and 30 series. There's this new data center card, an A6000, but also some of the 16 series. Remember there was like these oddball 16 series? And I think some of the higher end 10 series have got enough capability to support some of this stuff. But there's a link in the show notes where it outlines what the supported models are. But it was more than I was expecting to see.
And am I reading this right? Is that there's a patch for Quake 2 to support this?
Yes, there is. So I already have. So Quake 2 RTX is already a thing. So this is the only, at the moment, it's the only game on Linux that supports RTX.
Bless.
And I imagine they've been doing that but via some sort of early adoption of, you know, APIs or what have you. I don't know the details. But they, on this day when the driver was released, they released a new patch for the Quake 2 RTX version, which adds full support for this new Vulkan ray tracing API. I will have to be playing that soon to try it out.
It feels like they had to do something because is there like nothing else that has ray tracing support on Linux? No other games.
Currently, Quake 2 RTX is literally the only game in town.
And it's from like 100 years ago.
Right. It's quite good fun, though. I have played it several times. I never played it first time round. I've quite enjoyed it. However, this all could change because RTX could also be coming to Proton. So in the new Vulkan version, in their SDK release announcement, it specifically calls out projects such as VKD3D, which is the translation layer for DirectX to Vulkan, and says that it should be efficiently capable to support layered DXR over Vulkan. So in time, it may be that those games, such as Cyberpunk 2077, where the ray tracing options are grayed out, maybe in the future, you'll be able to flip those switches and enjoy all of the new schnizzle on Linux as well.
Neat. Next up, in sad news, Zerizon, the Linux PC seller, has been forced to close. Zerizon's one of those companies that I remember hearing of some years back. They're based in California, so, you know, not local to me, and I'm sure people in California are more aware, or in the continental states are probably more aware of Zerizon. But unfortunately, they've had to shut down. Conditions brought about by the pandemic, including illness and parts shortages, they've cited as the primary causes. I don't know. It's difficult to know, you know, how much that plays a part and how much were they just not selling well, or were they not providing the types of machines that people wanted to buy. It's hard to know how much, you know, is each of those. We hear a lot about companies like System 76 and Tuxedo in Europe. They seem to have quite well-known, you know, brands online. You know, people are always talking about System 76 or Pop OS and their brand new devices. And I hear people talking about the Tuxedo machines because of their, you know, great battery life or super performance tuning or whatever it is they've done. But I don't recall hearing much about Zerizon. And I wonder if that may be partly why they didn't have that brand recognition outside a niche, or weren't able to innovate on their products, or whether it was just down to, you know, the current annual situation we're in.
When I looked at their announcement, and it does sound like this was the thing that tipped things over the edge. It sounded like things were sort of pretty touch and go for a while, and this was the final straw for them. But this was one of those organizations I was aware of years ago when I was actually looking to like buy a Linux computer. I found all of the various resellers, and Zerizon had some pretty compelling options back then. And the only reason I didn't get one from them was because the import duty from the US was a bit excessive, and silly things I really didn't think about very carefully was keyboards were US layout, but of course you can, you know, change the keyboard. So yeah, it's a shame.
Next up, some guy named Alan Pope has written a snappy blog post.
Yeah, I did. Actually, I've been working on that blog post for about 2 months now, and I just couldn't.
The length of it doesn't surprise me.
Actually, I wrote almost all of the first, like 80%, it was the last 20% I just couldn't get. The historical bit where I look back over, it's kind of a retrospective, because I've come up for 9 years of working at Canonical, I wanted to have a look back. And one of the things that I noticed when people, talk about the work that we do, like about snaps specifically, they often make bold statements about why we've done something, or they question why we've done something, as if we're just pulling stuff out of our butts, or whether we're just making stuff up as we go along and not having any well thought out and rational reason for making certain design decisions or choices. And I wanted to give people a bit of a backstory to say, look, this is how we got where we are. This is why we made some of these decisions. We have some history. We've been around a while. Like, so for you fly-by-night newbies who've arrived in the last 18 months and see everyone else telling us we're terrible people and we should have done something differently, maybe look back over the last 15 years and see all the other stuff we've done and see what led us to get to where we are now and the decisions we've made and the choices we've, you know, we've settled on. And that's kind of why I wrote it, was to kind of, you know, summarize the path that got us to where we are. That was it, really. Martin.
So Hewlett-Packard have announced that they are shipping Ubuntu on their ZBook Studio G7 and ZBook Create G7 laptops.
I think you mean ZBook.
I'm trying to project my inner American on this one, but okay, ZBooks.
Right.
But this is a customized version of Ubuntu, ooh, which includes the HP data science software bundle. And what that means is that they've got out-of-the-box GPU enablement on these devices, and it comes pre-installed with libraries and dev tools and Docker and all the stuff, native support for AWS and Google Cloud and Azure and IDEs like Visual Studio Code and PyCharm. And this is so that if you are into that there data science, these are machines you can buy, turn on, and just get down to the business of data sciencing.
So this is for your applications like machine learning and right, data analytics and visualization sort of stuff. That's why you mentioned the GPU stuff. This is where you might be using the GPU for processing data rather than for playing Cyberpunk.
Yes, I'm sure that's what everyone wrote on their, you know, requisition order at work.
So these are kind of higher end devices. They're not like your thin and light, you know, MacBook Air like device.
No, the Create is a little lighter, but the Studio is like a mobile workstation. So chunky CPU, hunky-chunky GPU, plenty RAM, plenty fast disk, all of that good stuff. But they are designed to crunch large data sets and give you numbers as fast as is possible in that form factor. And it's an interesting trend we're seeing generally, with our OEM partners that they are targeting these high-end sort of workstation class mobile workstations, particularly with Ubuntu, because there's demand within the AIML community for Ubuntu on mobile workstations that can do this stuff. So the idea here is that you could, you know, install Ubuntu on a laptop and install all of this software and configure it. But HP have done all that hard work for you, so you can just pick it up and off you go. And HP say that they'll be extending availability to other platforms during 2021 as well.
This is interesting because, you know, the kind of people who are doing this kind of stuff don't necessarily want to be DevOps engineers and don't want to have to be administrators of software on their systems. They just want to, like, turn it on, plug it in, and get data sciencing.
Yeah.
I imagine. You know, having seen some of the support tickets that we get from people like this, yeah, all of this stuff needs the operating system and all those bits and bobs need to get out the way, and they need to sit and write their Python or whatever it is and just crack on and churn the numbers as fast as they can with the hardware. So that's pretty cool. Next up, Ubuntu 16.04 LTS is going to get extended security maintenance. So this is what we call ESM. You may have heard that LTS releases are supported for 5 years and 10 years with ESM. So that's what happened with 14.04 and 12.04 before it, I think.
Only in a limited way. I think that wasn't like a full 5 years. It was a year by year on a case by case basis.
Right. They really wanted to get people off it onto a newer release. Whereas 16.04, you know, if you want to stick on 16.04, because it was such a fabulous release, you can stay on it and get ESM and keep on it for another 5 years after it goes out of support April next year for standard maintenance, but you get extended beyond that, which I find interesting. If you are an Ubuntu member, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you get Ubuntu Advantage for free with your Ubuntu membership. Yes, you just go to ubuntu.com/advantage and sign in, and it detects you're an Ubuntu member, and you get a whole bunch of stuff free.
Yeah,
for your up to a certain limited number of machines. Mm. But, you know, if you're a developer, you've probably got two or three machines that you might want to put this on.
Yeah.
But this is for 1604. So I don't know. Are you running any 1604 machines over there, Mark?
I don't think so. I think 1804 is my oldest.
I'm running two. The servers for the Ubuntu Mate website are running 1604.
Interesting. So you're going to opt them into Ubuntu Advantage?
I'm considering it, although other people in the community are saying, let's get upgraded to 18.04. But, you know.
I think they're right.
Yeah. What with 2004 coming out 6 months ago? Yeah, might be nice.
Yeah, but servers, you know, you don't need to keep upgrading forever and always. I'm quite tempted to try out this ESM stuff, you know.
Yeah, I would like to, but I'm never on a machine that's capable of using it because I keep moving forward all the time, silly old me. So, yeah, take a look at the blog post, which gives some details about things to consider when opting for ESM. Next up, Mark.
Rhys Davies has written a blog post about Raspberry Pi and Ubuntu in 2020. And my, what a lot of things happened.
Like what?
Well, there's been the Raspberry Pi Ubuntu desktop image. Woo-hoo. For Ubuntu 2010. There's been the Raspberry Pi 400 and Compute Module 4 with Ubuntu support. MicroKates and LexD on the Raspberry Pi, the Raspberry Pi Imager distributed as a snap, and much more. Ubuntu appliances, of course. Yeah. Mm. And all sorts of things.
There was a new version of that Raspberry Pi Imager came out just today, actually, 1.5.
How on earth would you know that?
Because I have a shell script that pokes all the things and sends me a little notification when new stuff comes out. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. And then I looked and it was already built and in the Edge channel of the Snap Store. So, yeah, try it out. It's pretty good. I didn't realize so much had happened in 1 year. You know, you think...
Yeah.
Yeah, Raspberry Pi has been around a long time, and you just think this stuff is like a continuous drumbeat. Yeah, okay, there's new devices that come out, and there's a big hurrah for that. But there's a ton of stuff that happened with Raspberry Pi this year. That's really cool.
Mm. Yeah, it's a nice blog post. It's a nice little retrospective. I think that's sort of a theme that's emerging in sort of tech arenas at the moment, a little bit of a look back at 2020, not too closely because it was rubbish, but you know, it's nice to focus on the positive things that happened this year.
Yes. And something else, Martin, happened this year?
Yeah, speaking of positive things, I just wanted to call attention to the fine work of Andy Hazen in the Ubuntu community, who's put out a call for testing in the Ubuntu discourse to test some revised Steam packages for the Hasuit Hippo. So I updated Steam for 2004 and haven't had time to revisit it. And Andy Hazen stepped up and said that he was interested in doing the work to update Steam with newer versions. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's sort of happened in the way the packages and the metadata and the UDEV rules and all that sort of stuff are stitched together.
For the Steam controller and all that.
Yeah, all them VR devices. So he's refreshed all of that. You can come and test those. And I think Andy has also prepared packages to SRU these improvements back to Groovy and Focal as well. So an excellent bit of work and worthy of a little, you know, hat tip and a thank you.
Yeah, when I saw this, I immediately upgraded the machine behind me, which has some games installed on it, maybe. And it's a NVIDIA, you know, it's a decently spec'd laptop. So I upgraded from Groovy to Hirsute. Because one of the test cases he wanted to prove was, you know, if you upgrade, does it still work? And, you know, it does. So I did some testing by launching Steam and playing on the Steam controller, and which was good because the Steam controller just worked. I just plugged the little USB dongle you get with a Steam controller. I just plugged that in the laptop. And I've never plugged a Steam controller into that laptop before. And I just had to use the menu in Steam Big Picture mode to say there's a Steam controller and tap in the buttons, and away I went. Play games. It was great.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, it's really useful.
I've noticed you're always extremely enthusiastic to involve yourself in testing when there's some games to be played, just to be sure everything's working correctly.
Well, you know, Martin, someone's got to do it. And, you know, I don't mind taking one for the team and spending 3 hours playing video games. You know, it's a tough job, Martin, mm-hmm. but someone's got to do it.
Yeah, it's a selfless act. I understand.
Yeah, you're welcome. And on that note, that's the end of the community news. And now it's time for some proper news. First up in proper news, Martin.
Bitcoin is on the verge of an explosive movement.
Oh, we should see a doctor about that.
I know, right?
People who say that tend to have some Bitcoin, I find.
it's interesting. So it's 2017 all over again. What I find interesting about this is Bitcoin has had a couple of surges during 2020 in May and August, and it sort of rallied around March. But no one's really talking about what's going on with Bitcoin. But back in 2017, within, you know, our audience, not just the Ubuntu podcast audience, but, you know, Linux enthusiasts generally, everyone was maximum hype about the value of Bitcoin as it was approaching $20,000 and making wild projections for how many hundreds of thousands of dollars it was going to skyrocket to. And what's happening at the moment is Bitcoin has just hit an all-time high. Just shy of $20,000. And the first time it's eclipsed those prices in 2017, which was 1,000 days ago. So I just found it interesting that, you know, Bitcoin is very much, you know, if you're into Bitcoin, it's a very exciting time. But it doesn't seem to have really penetrated sort of, you know, mainstream interest.
Are they a bit exhausted by it all? Because it's like up, oh, down, up, oh, down.
Well, there is that.
Oh, the Chinese are doing it. Oh, no, down. It's, I don't know.
So what is it that's happening now, which is making people now say, oh, no, this time it's definitely going to go really high? What is there something that's happening in terms of, you know,
in 2020, people? What could possibly be happening that's making people look for non-governmental regimented finance systems?
But are people sort of actually therefore moving more money into Bitcoin, or have there been more people who are accepting Bitcoin for a wider range of goods and services? Is there, you know, are there particular drivers for this sort of projection?
Yeah.
Or is it just, it looks like it's going up, so we're going to say it is?
No, well, it is going up, but there's a couple of things that are happening. And the two things that people have analysed that are happening is there does seem to be, there's been a number of articles about billionaires that are actually investing in Bitcoin right now as part of their sort of, you know, investment portfolio. So there's mm-hmm. been a lot of money injected into Bitcoin. And the other thing that's happening is there's more Bitcoin addresses than there's ever been. So just over 33 million at the moment.
Isn't that always going to be the case? Like, this is the fastest computer I've ever owned. Well, that's always going to be the case.
There's been some analysis on this, and the feeling is that those addresses are ostensibly retailers who are looking to invest in Bitcoin as a means for transactions, mm-hmm. which is something I've been doing for years, but it looks like there's enough interest now from retailers. But the other thing about the current value that's so important is a lot of people lost a lot of capital in 2017 when they were buying Bitcoin in and around that $20,000 price, because it got to 18,000 and change. And this is why 20,000 is being so carefully tracked, because there's a lot of people sitting on Bitcoin that was very expensive. And 1,000 days later, they're looking at the opportunity of actually being able to, you know, turn a profit on what they
or dump it all on the market and make it crash again.
And it'll right. crash again. Brilliant.
But that's, I mean, that Perfect. Could happen. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting to see. But the projections are that maybe it will stick around the $20,000 value for a while now.
Remember, ladies and gentlemen, don't get your cryptocurrency advice from a podcast.
Especially this one.
Next up, Cloud Ready is now part of Google.
Oh, that sounds like good news.
Yes, Cloud Ready. You're probably thinking, who or what is Cloud Ready?
I know the answer to this.
Yes, it is a supported build of Chromium, which is like an open source version of Chrome OS, Chromium OS. And they make it available for a range of devices. So the goal here is if you've got an enterprise or you're an education establishment and you want to repurpose a bunch of, in inverted commas, old systems, as in, you know, they're no longer running, say, for example, Windows very well, you can slap Cloud Ready on them and they effectively become Chromebooks. And you can manage them with the Google admin tools, just like you would a real Chromebook, a Google branded official one. And so users can repurpose existing hardware or buy new hardware, but alternatives to the ones that are being provided by Google themselves. Anyway, the company that did that has been around for about 10 years and Google have acquired them, it appears.
Cloud Ready is brilliant. I tinkered with this a little, I don't know, about a year or so ago. I put it on an old Dell laptop we've got. Most of the computers that are in the supported list for Cloud Ready are things that were sold by Dell into education that mm-hmm. have ended their sort of lease period. So they come out of their supported lease period and now they can be repurposed because you've now got, you know, hundreds of these devices.
Mm, there's a lot of ThinkPads in the list as well.
Interesting. It was mostly Dell when I looked. Yeah, I have to take a look. It's quite cool.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what Google's plans are for Cloud Ready. If it's, because, I mean, it feels to me like this is a, you know, a competitor for their product. And so they just buy it out and shut it down.
Well, is it a competitor? Because if you've got an estate of like 20,000 Dell laptops or ThinkPads that you want to repurpose and you want to use, up until that point, if you've not got any kind of educational deal with Google for Google Classroom, mm-hmm. and you put Cloud Ready on all these machines, you suddenly need something to administer them. So you're going to be throwing money at Google. So even if you haven't bought the hardware, which I would imagine the revenue for that goes to the hardware vendor, yeah. Asus or whoever, HP, whoever makes the Chromebook, with Google Classroom, the revenue goes straight to Google, right. not to a third-party hardware vendor. So I think it is a revenue generator, I would imagine. Otherwise, they wouldn't be that interested. And in fact, a few years ago, Google did invest in Cloud Ready. So I think...
maybe I'm just being cynical.
Well, I mean, to be fair, they've published an FAQ on their site, which is full of answers like no changes yet and no immediate changes and things like that. So it's entirely possible that, you know, this will be
absorbed and shut down or merged with their existing corporate offerings.
Yeah.
Or maybe it will stay as a kind of Skunkworks, like semi-external thing. It would be nice if they added the features that are not in Cloud Ready. For example, you can't run Android apps on Cloud Ready. You can run Linux desktop apps. That was added recently, but not Android. Maybe they can now license it because it's part of Google. They're part of Google now. They could license it so that those people who have, you know, some bunch of ThinkPads and they repurpose them with Cloud Ready could then run Android apps on them. Maybe. It's fascinating. Anyway, what's next, Mark?
CentOS is refocusing. So
that never sounds good.
Well, CentOS was it a couple of years ago now? Was bought by Red Hat.
5 years ago.
5 years ago. Wow.
Golly.
And there was some speculation around the time as to what that meant, because CentOS is basically a free recompiled version of Red Hat. So you can run an entirely Red Hat compatible system without having to pay Red Hat for licensing
their
support.
Trademarks.
Yeah, basically. What has been announced by both CentOS and Red Hat is that CentOS is no longer going to rebuild the current Red Hat Enterprise Linux distribution. So the current version is CentOS 8, which is a rebuild of Red Hat 8. It's now going to be replaced with CentOS Stream, which is going to be the new development upstream for Red Hat Enterprise Linux. And there won't be an option which is a binary compatible with the current version of Red Hat Enterprise Linux. Now, this has been met with quite the wailing and gnashing of teeth from the community.
Yeah, I guess it depends who you know. I think there was some initial people polishing their pitchforks, but I think once they've taken a step back and realised actually, you know, there's a bit of time here. It's not like it's going to change overnight. There was some consternation that the expected support window, which should have stretched to 2029 for CentOS 8, is somewhat curtailed to end of 2021. So if you were about to deploy CentOS 8, maybe you're on CentOS 7 and you're thinking of going to CentOS 8, or maybe you just have gone to CentOS 8, then, you know, you're a bit scuppered in terms of long-term support of that. I can see that being frustrating. And I'm sure there are some companies, some enterprises out there who've done that and probably feel that way. Yes. And so would be, you know, polishing their pitchforks. But I also imagine there are people who could survive for that year and then maybe move on to streams. I don't know. Is streams really not that viable as an option for them?
I work at a place that runs Red Hat on its servers, and it runs CentOS in some cases as well. And, you know, it's the, as a, you know, enterprise server distribution, it's the kind of thing which tends to sit there until the very last week that it's supported in, like, the very last way. And then suddenly, oh, we need to upgrade this because it's going to go out of support. And, there are better ways of managing it than that in some cases, but
I'm sure some organizations do that. Yeah, sure.
Exactly. So for people who might have, plumbed for CentOS 8 thinking, oh, well, that's fine, we've got 8 years to think about this, 9 years to think about this, and suddenly saying, oh no, you've now got to do something about this next year. And, you know, possibly downgrading back to CentOS 7 looks like a viable option if you want more support. I can see why people have got upset about that. And the other option, of course, is, oh, well, you can pay for Red Hat, which if you don't already do, is a serious consideration.
I notice there's been at least two forks already pop up. One called Rocky Linux, which is started by one of the co-founders of CentOS originally, and is named in homage to one of the other first founders of CentOS. And that's already popped up on GitHub. And a cloud provider called Cloud Linux have said they'll continue with a fork that maintains CentOS 8 style lifetime. So, it's all a bit raw at the moment because the announcement was made fairly recently, but I can see this being calmed a little over the Christmas and into the new year. I'm sure people will figure out a path forward.
And if not, they could always switch to Ubuntu LTS.
Well, I didn't like to mention it, you know, because then we're seen as complete corporate shills. But yeah, totally. Just move all your stuff to Ubuntu. And that's the end of the news. And that's the end of our penultimate show of the season. Next week, we'll be joining everyone else with a retrospective of 2020 and how amazing it was. We'll also have some GUI love and some of your wonderful feedback, probably quite a lot of your wonderful feedback. If you want to stay in contact with us when we're off the air towards the end of the year, you can drop us an email, show@ubuntupodcast.org. Follow us on Twitter, we're @UbuntuPodcast, or you can join our Telegram channel, which is easy to get to, ubuntupodcast.org/telegram. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.